Senator Ann Milner. We're really delighted to have Senator Milner with us today. She is serving as the Assistant Majority Whip and serves on several really important committees in the Senate. But for our purposes today, most importantly, she serves as co-chair of the Higher Education Strategic Planning Commission, which has been working over the last number of months to study the structure and governance of higher education here in the state of Utah and to help us ensure that we have an optimal structure and that we can serve students effectively in the future. And so we're really delighted to have her with us here today to talk about the work of the commission. She brings a wealth of experience, including, as I think most all of you know, as a past president of Weber State University, where she served as president for 10 years from 2002 to 2012. And so we welcome Senator Milner. Thank you.
So they tell me to make sure I turned on my mic. So thank you all for the opportunity to be here. I have spent lots of meetings with regents and trustees. So this is kind of like old home week. I remember being in the Great Hall many times. And I want to thank all of you for what you do for higher education in this state. I think you all know that I am certainly a believer that higher education is critical to the future of this state, to making sure we have an educated citizenry, and we also have a workforce that has the talent to drive our economy for the future of the state. And so it's I believe in what you do and have a passion for the work that you do. And thank all of you who really volunteer to come to this table and be part of it. Also want to thank, we have some other legislators in the back of the room. Would you all stand up? Come on. So two of them are actually on the Strategic Higher Education Commission, Representative Mike Noel and also Senator Evan Vickers. They are also on the commission, so they will correct me if I say anything that's wrong. I want to begin by kind of starting, because people have asked lots of questions over time about why are we doing this, why are we doing this now, and what's important, I mean, aren't we doing fine? And the reality is, let's think about what you all have seen, many of you probably, Pam Perlick's presentations, kind of talking about what we see happening in the state and the fact in the next 40 to 45 years, we're going to double in population in this state. That is significant growth that will change lots of things. And when we think about that, we have to think about how are we going to best position the state to be able to thrive through that growth. Now, I'd much rather have that problem than be in a stagnant growth place or losing growth or anything else. And there are states that would be welcome to be in the place that we're in. But it also means we need to think pretty strategically about what we do. And we need to think about that in all sectors. We need to think about it in education. We need to think about it in higher education. We need to think about it in infrastructure that supports that. So when we think about transportation and water and power systems and all the things that are important to make that happen, we need to think about it in terms of health and social services. I mean, how are we going to make sure we're able to meet those needs in our state? So while higher education sometimes has felt like we're just focused on that, I think you would find that we're really trying to think about where do we need to go and how do we best position the state for the future in all of the various aspects that are going to be important for us to be able to be well-positioned for the future. It's just that, and actually next month, we're having a long-range planning session of the legislature, and we're going to be focusing on infrastructure. And how do we best position ourselves when we think about the infrastructure components? So these kinds of conversations are going around in all of the areas that we're impacted. This isn't just about higher education. It really has to be much more systematic thinking about how do we best prepare the state for our future. But what you care about is what this commission is doing, and I know. And the interesting part about the planning that we're doing here is to say we're able, as a legislature, to bring together both of our systems of higher education in this state. Because we have a USHE system and we have a UTEC system, there's really kind of no overarching group that's able to bring those groups together to think about where we need to go in higher education. And this gives us an opportunity to be able to do that. So we have representatives from UTEC, representatives from USHE, we have legislators, and we have representatives from our business community on that commission because we're trying to get this right. So what the legislation said, and I'm going to move off here. It's very hard for me to stay in one place. The legislation charged the commission with doing these things, to develop a strategic plan. And by that, I mean a pretty overarching strategic plan. It's not going to have all the details. That's really going to fall back on our systems of higher education and our institutions to kind of fill in all the blanks, but really meant to look at that high level. We brought in a consultant to help us. We felt like we needed to have kind of that external expertise. We wanted some folks who had done this in other states. We wanted to be able to learn from those experiences and be able to make sure we had a thoughtful process, but also a data-driven process. So both those elements were really important. We wanted them to really collect good data for us so we could feel like we were data-driven. We wanted them, though, to test that by going out and doing regional meetings. Because all of you know that urban Utah is different from rural Utah. And even if you think about rural Utah, what's going on in the Vernal Duchesne area is different than what's going on down in the Moab area, for example. So we need to be able to kind of test some of the data, begin to say, what does that mean when we think about actually going out and visiting with these regional groups? And what we asked them to do was to visit not only with the education partners in those communities, but also with the business community and the economic development people in those communities. So we could get a real sense from a variety of perspectives around the state what the needs were and help to validate our information and make sure that we weren't missing things. They are then asked to put together a draft report. Legislation says a final report needs to come back by November. In that strategic plan, we highlighted these areas that we wanted them to help us think about. How do we provide a quality, accessible, and innovative post-secondary education across the state of Utah? How are we going to do that in the next 20 to 30 years? Not how, what are we going to do in the next 5 years, but what are we, where do we need to be going for the next 20 to 30 years as this population grows? So really trying to think out in decades, not in years. How are we going to employ the most cost-effective and affordable modes? We know cost-effective is going to be important from the state perspective because we're going to have lots of needs out there and lots of people that want to come into higher education. We also know with our constituency that affordability is really important. So both of those elements need to be balanced. How are we going to integrate thinking about prior learning and competency-based experiences to meet degree requirements? How do we think about this perhaps in some different ways? We know our UTEC institutions are doing a lot of work about competency-based, but if you go out and talk to the folks at Complete College America, et cetera, they will tell you you really need to have mechanisms for, in the world that we live in, being able to evaluate prior learning, and particularly for the returning adult. So they are able to see they could gain those competencies in other places. How do they then bring that back, demonstrate those competencies, and get some credit for that? And oh, by the way, the research that Complete College America has done says that those students who return are more likely to graduate, and we're more likely to retain them. And by the way, they take 9 credits more at our institutions than they would if we don't give them prior learning. So it's pretty powerful research that Complete College America has done. Well, what's the implication of that for our state, particularly in a time of growth? How do we maximize the role of higher education in workforce development? You all, I mean, many of you are employers, but in addition to that, you all know that as you go out into the communities and you interact with people, you are hearing lots of workforce needs out there. How do we make sure that we are meeting the talent needs of the state going forward? And I believe that Utah is positioned to do that better than any other state because we have a group of people who work together well, a group of people that can kind of rise to the occasion. We have lots of young people. And if we think about how we are going to help them meet future talent needs, we can soar as a state. I kind of say people don't go to employers don't locate in Boston and in Silicon Valley because they love the tax policy and the low regulations of those environments. They go for what? Why do they go there? Talent. They go for talent. And we ought to be the best at that in Utah. We have the capability to be the best at that in Utah. How do we develop a kind of a statewide overall kind of master plan for where we need to provide and how we provide services? And technology will be an incredibly important piece of that. So it's not just thinking about physical campus structures, but how do we maximize the use of technology to reach students? And then finally, how do we govern? How do we, once we know where we want to go, then how do we kind of build the governance structure to help us get there? And I know that oftentimes people will kind of go back to this one first, but actually for me, all the rest is what we need to focus on first, and then figure out how do you best get there as a state. So this is kind of the timeline of the work of the commission in that, and you will see we're down in these summer months right here, and our consultants are kind of working on kind of assimilating all the data, and I'm going to share some of that with you in a minute, kind of beginning to pull together a report, and the expectation is in September we will have a commission meeting where we will have a draft report from our consultants. And I just want to clearly say that's draft. That will provide the opportunity then for lots of discussion about where we need to go and for people to interact with that. And in many cases, what we ask the consultants to do, and actually is in the legislation, is that, you know, in some cases, you'll probably need to provide us alternative scenarios. I mean, these are different ways that you could do it. So we have the ability then to be able to have rich conversations about that and determine what we think is best for the state of Utah and finalize that report by the end of November. So it should be lots to do this fall. I wanted to step back because my guess is not many of you have been to the website for the Higher Education Strategic Planning Commission. Am I right? Anybody been there? I got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Okay, I've got a few of you. All right, good, thank you. So this may just be old news for all of you, and there are a few commission members here that may be somewhat old news for you, but I just felt like it might be helpful when we have all the trustees and the regents and the legislators together to kind of just share a few of the findings that have come from the data as a part of the work that's already been done. Because it's kind of shared knowledge, I think, that we all need. Some of this is not going to surprise you, but I want to start by saying, you know, they're kind of taking a look at saying, you need to see where Utah is. I mean, not just focus on the state, but we kind of start to take this look, see where we are, how do we compare to other states, kind of at this little bit higher level. And there's some pretty interesting work that you will see in here. So if I go and I look at that college-going rate, you will see that our college-going rate in the state is not as high as other states. Now, we know there's some cultural factors in that, et cetera, but when you pick that back up even later, you'll see that at 25 to 49, that we get closer to the average, but I think the kind of going on to college is something we're going to have to think about in the state in order to help us develop that talent pool that we need. And we're behind where other states are. And you can see that kind of throughput rate when you look at our graduates as well, both in our two-year institutions, in our bachelor's and master's institutions, and our research institutions. And you know where I want to be? I want to be in that top five, don't you? I mean, don't you want to be in one of the top five states? And there's really no reason we shouldn't be able to do that in Utah. That's just my belief about that, the collective will and ability of the state to do that. Now, it's fairly interesting to look at the participation rates out there. Interesting, highest participation rates in some of our small rural counties. But look at some of our other counties. I'm probably going to be in trouble with Scott Wyatt here, but I mean, what? Definitely. Never. Oh, hey, remember that he said that, all right? So if we look here, I mean, there's some cause for concern about the unevenness in our participation rates. This is not striking. When you saw the slides before, that kind of showed where we are in terms of participation. But it's also differentially different across different counties in our state. This is an important stat, and interesting enough, I've been around the system for a really long time. I'm going to tell you that this is not inconsistent with what we saw 20 to 30 years ago in the state. So if you look at some of our institutions, even the University of Utah, 45% of the students from the University of Utah come from Salt Lake County. Okay? If you go and look at Utah Valley, 60% of the students come from Utah County. If you look at Weber State, 42% of the students come from Davis and 31% from Weber County. Okay, that's almost 70% of the students, or over 70% of the students. So a phenomenon in Utah is that students go to school where they live. And interesting enough, when the consultants were asked about that, they said, you know, the reality is, even though people don't think that, that actually is fairly true in other states across this country, that students tend to go to school where they live. So that means demographics makes a difference to us, right? Where we grow makes a difference if students are, by and large, tend to go to school where they are. So let's look at this data is from the Kim Gardner Institute. You have all probably seen the presentations on the demographics in the state of Utah. But if you look at that 18 to 24-year-old population, which is that orange line up there, you'll see that we're going to grow substantially, we'll level off a bit, and we'll continue to grow. If you look at the 25 to 44-year-old population, that's probably on a more steady decline. For me, I think that's just as important a population as that traditional college-going population, particularly in Utah, for two reasons. One, that we know our students, many of them are going to go on religious missions. We also know that many of them work to go to school. But they will come back, and in all likelihood, they are going to be balancing work and school. And oh, by the way, by the time they leave some of our four-year institutions, they probably will be married and perhaps even have a family. And they have already moved into that 25 to 44-year-old population. So I think in Utah, we have to look at both. Combined with, we are a state that has a large percentage of students with some college and no degree. And that means in terms of continuing to upskill and to be able to maintain what they need in the workforce of the future, they're going to need to be able to come back to college. If you look at college-age population, what you're going to see here is that also it will steadily increase. Your competition is public ed, not surprising, but it's also where you get part of your inputs. But we're going to see steady increase in that college-going population. So we're going to grow, and we're going to grow significantly. Where is that growth going to happen? Is it going to be kind of nice and easily distributed all over the state? No, by the way. This shows you that Salt Lake is going to get 21%, and that's probably not real surprising given the percent of the population they have. But look at Utah County. 33% of all the growth in the state in Utah County. Does that mean we need to think strategically about the future? Look at what's going on down in Washington County, 11%, and I'll show you some more there that makes you think that's important as well. Actually, a lot of other growth along the urban part is kind of probably manageable if you think about it. But we've got some places here that we're going to have significant growth and we have to address. Okay, if you look at this in terms of percent change in population, so in going down now into that 18 to 24-year-old population versus just the whole population, where do you see the greatest percentages? Wasatch? Good, where else? Utah and Washington County, right? In terms of percentages. So areas that we need to think pretty strategically about. That was percentage growth. This is real numbers. What do you see in Utah County? And then Salt Lake County, and then Washington County. Significant growth that we need to be able to address. Secondly, I told you I think it's really important that we think about that 25 to 44-year-old population given our culture in Utah. And where do you see the highest growth in that population in the state? Washington County. And Morgan. Morgan and Washington County. Is there a difference in the size of Morgan and Washington County? Yeah, there is, obviously. So this particular population, what does it look like in real numbers? Utah County, followed by Washington County, followed then by Salt Lake County. Would most of us have ever said we thought that we would see Washington County, in terms of the numbers, in terms of growth, higher than Salt Lake County? I mean, I think we've become more attuned to Utah County's fast growth, but just look at that. So we're not going to grow in a nice, neat package across the state, and we need to think strategically about how we're going to do that. And the consultant's kind of recommendation in all this, when they look at it, is to say, this is kind of if business as usual. We do things just like we've been doing, and there's no change. Student patterns stay the same, and the demographics by 2050, this is the number of new students we will see at the institutions. Now, in some cases, I think you'd say we can accommodate that. In others, you'd say, how are we best going to accommodate that? So I did want to spend just a couple of minutes thinking about the kind of workforce side of this and the economic side of this, because I think that's important. It's not just about demographics. It's also about a much about a total state look at this. So if I look at total gross state product by industry and think about 2016, we see that our growth in Utah is in finance, insurance, real estate, rental, leasing, and information. You see where information services is, and obviously we're growing, and you saw the Kim Gardner probably report that's just coming out. We're in a growth trajectory, and this was 2016, but we're certainly growing in those areas, but we have more potential, I think, for growth in those areas. And we are seeing, a decline in some of the older traditional industries, and as you all know. Here's what the workforce needs as projected from, or here's what workforce was from 2012 to 2016. And the reason I'm showing you this is I wanted you to see, if you look at total number employed, and I always worry about talking about this stuff in front of Carrie Main, by the way. And this is her data, I'm sure. Right, Carrie?
I'm familiar.
Yeah. But if you look at those numbers, take it, manufacturing, 120,000 total employed. The number employed with a college credential, because it's important for us to know. We know manufacturing, some jobs probably require some kind of credential, whether that's a certificate or a degree. But kind of understanding that mix of what it takes in different industries, and because that is important in terms of thinking about the kinds of programs we need to have. If you looked at kind of professional scientific area, you see that's 55% of them have a credential. If you look at education, obviously that's no surprise, 72% have a credential. If you go down to health, it's 64%. But understanding where we're growing in the state and in terms of what the workforce needs are, what the percentage of credentialing needs are, it's really important that we start to figure that out within our projections and where we have needs. Yes? This is 2016, so I'm showing you old data now.
And I guess the reason why I'm asking the question is because if you go back to the previous slide that says that we have a much lower rate of people that are graduating from college, you could make the argument that that isn't sufficient. Like, really what we need is we need more people with college degrees in those roles than what we currently have. That's not capturing.
Well, and I think what you would hear from employers out there is, there are certain pockets that we have real needs. Computer science and engineering at the top level. But there's also lots of need in that middle skill area, certificates and associate degrees, and you can't go any place in the state and you won't hear that. So there are more needs out there, but it's really trying to understand directionally where do we need to go. I'm not going to spend much time on this, but this is really trying to look at 2026, and what do we see is projected increases in employment in 2026, and what you're going to see there is kind of the healthcare and social assistance area, professional, technical services, educational services, et cetera. And then you have to filter in what do we need in terms of the percentage of credentialed people to be able to meet those workforce needs. So this takes some work of kind of pulling these elements together for us to be able to do some kind of trend projection about workforce needs for the future, because it's a complex picture, and we tend to do a lot of this based on trend data, and which Carrie has kind of hammered into my head. On the other hand, we're seeing a lot of change in our economy, and the problem with the trend data in that environment is that if you've really got a spike in tech company growth all of a sudden, your trend data may not be robust enough to tell you what your project your future needs. And another example of that, Hill Air Force Base now have just signed in the last couple of years some 50-year contracts for the F-35 and for ICBMs, et cetera. And so they're ramping up their needs significantly. You're not going to capture that in trend data. So you have to kind of try to understand what the needs are, what employment we need to have, but you also have to stay pretty close to your industry and listening to the business people in your community. This shows you average openings. I'm not going to talk about that other than to say what the consultant said to us is there is, you talk about baccalaureate and graduate a lot, but there's a lot of middle skill need here. We need to focus on middle skills and making sure that's the certificates and associates. They also call it sub-baccalaureate. We need to make sure we're meeting those needs, and that's when they went out to the regional groups, that's what they heard consistently in every regional meeting that they were in from employers and kind of the folks that do economic development work in those regions. This one's kind of an interesting slide because I think it's kind of one of the challenges that we face. So Utah is seen in the kind of new economy of tech, innovation, all those. It's seen as a new economy state. So we're in that top tier. That's what that kind of green look means. But if you look at the percentage of adults with a college degree, we're higher than the average. On the other hand, if you look at per capita income, we're lower. Now, we also know we have large families, and that makes a difference in the state. But I think our goal is to do two things, to increase our attainment and to increase our salaries that support our families in this state and having the kinds of jobs that do that. So if you look at, and you'll see where we are in terms of per capita income, again, that's the influence of the fact that we have large families. On the other hand, when they took employment data and looked at it and applied our kind of average, or excuse me, our mean wages against our completion levels of school, found that less than higher school and higher and high school graduates actually make more on average than they do in the nation. But our folks with credentials, certificates, associates, and baccalaureates actually make less than the national average. So I think that goes back to that other slide that we talked about, that we tend to have a bit lower salaries for our credentialed people in the state. We saw it there, we see it here. And I think our goal is to get it that we have the right kinds of jobs in the state that will bring higher incomes, that we have the talent pool that will attract it and keep it. And here's where we are on this new economy index. So we are in the right place. It's just that we should be able to get higher on that index, and we have the power and the capability to do that in the state. And our research universities are helping us get there. If you look at what they're doing and how they rank in the nation. We're playing above our league, and which thank you for that. And I think that's really important for our state if we're going to be where we need to for the future. So this is, how much time do I have? 20, oh, do I? Oh, wow. Okay. Then I want to talk about these, because these are some preliminary findings, and, you know, I wanted you to just engage with me in this part of it. I wanted to give you a little bit of background on some of the data that we're looking at. I want to tell you that all the data is out there. It's all public. You can go to the Higher Education Commission page on the legislative website, and you can find it all, okay? But I think it's important to kind of bring out some of the high points. So here's the consultants based on, they met with lots of different stakeholders prior to trying to gather their data. Then they spent time gathering data, and then they went out and did the regional meetings. This is really some preliminary findings they had before the regional meetings. So, you're not surprised to see that most of the population growth is going to be in Utah County. So Utah County is going to be an important part of thinking about for Utah when we think about higher education in the state. What about Utah County? That's just a natural question. And what also follows from that probably is Salt Lake and Washington County as well, because that's really where most of the growth is going to be in the state. They really commented on the wages of our more highly educated workforce being below the national average. Surprising, I think, to them that that was true. The fact that if you just look at the data, based on trend data, here's where you'll see that the numbers of job openings are going to be, and then where they see the greatest job growth. And I think for them, the message here is you've got to think about not just the baccalaureate degree, you also in the graduate degrees, you've got to be thinking about the certificates and the associate degrees if we're going to be able to meet the needs out there. The full continuum will be very important. They went back and looked at our attainment goal, which was 66% by 2020. And interesting enough, they kind of said, first of all, 66%, does that include like certificates and associates and baccalaureates? And is there a breakdown on that? And what really drives that goal? And is it really driving policy making, et cetera? So they just kind of raised the question there. And I think that's really all they did. Yes?
Is the impact of the Inland Port possibly in the transportation? Is the impact land port possibly?
No, that's not in there at all. That's really just based because most of the data they have right now in those areas is really based on trend data. So it's based on what has been.
So with the airport and its growth and its change and the inland port, that could skew numbers back towards Salt Lake County. And also the kinds of jobs.
Absolutely. I mean, this will kind of be a living, breathing work that we're going to be needing to do. And as we see other shifts, things will change. On the other hand, I don't think Utah County growth is probably going to change that much. I think we're probably, Utah County is going to continue to be our fastest growing county because the numbers so far outstrip what you see in Salt Lake and other places. So for them, they identified kind of some potential emerging goals. And they're just laying these out there, okay, for people to start thinking about and talking about. And part of it's based on all the feedback that's come to them, part based on the data. How are we going to create capacity? We clearly need to do that. And that capacity could be in our institutions, in traditional education. It can be in using technology and distance education. How are we going to make sure that we're meeting our capacity? and especially in Utah County. How are we going to expand our economy in ways that our highly educated workforce can earn a competitive wage? And we both know this is like chicken and egg. We got to build the talent so we can have the workforce that we need, et cetera. So I was with somebody yesterday who has a high-tech company. He's just said he just hired 100 people to get the talent that he needed. He was bringing them in from out of state. Now, I didn't say all 100 people. I mean, he said, I'm hiring you in state. But so we really need to think about how we're going to step up our game to make sure we have the talent at all levels. That's really the point. And we hear that back from our business community. How are we going to have a system that's responsive to needs? And they would say needs across the state. We have very different needs in parts of the urban Wasatch Front versus what might be needs down in Washington County versus what might be needs out in some of our rural areas. And we have to get better at thinking about the whole and how we're going to make sure we're meeting the specific needs of those different groups. We're going to have to find a way to maintain affordability. That's really important in Utah, and that's part of what they're hearing. From lots of different constituency groups, that affordability is important. We know that we are very low in terms of what it costs, but the affordability piece. How are we going to deliver a broad array of programs to less populated parts of the state, as we talked about before, and how are we going to get the right mix of baccalaureate and sub-baccalaureate and make sure they're clearly articulated? Oh, and by the way, how are we going to fund it? And how are we going to fund that also in the context of all the other growth needs that will be generated out there in terms of thinking about infrastructure and thinking about public education, et cetera. So that's going to be important. And they raise, which we hear often, equity of funding for institutions, that those are components. What about governance? Do we maintain our two-structure system? Do we do something different? Should we have some kind of coordinating entity? That's what they do in some states. But we need to put out there, how are we going to make sure, what's the right governance structure going forward? And then what will be the functions of that governance structure and what are the roles and the responsibilities of various components of it. So let me stop there. What questions do you have? Oh, I think I clicked too many slides here and I missed this one. They also raised this issue, and I know I've heard this one a lot. What about community college functions? Do we continue dual mission? Do we think about separate community college functions? They were pretty careful to say when they talked about this, we are hearing this, these are questions we are hearing from others as we go around, questions that people have. So that's an important piece. Should we sharpen our missions in some ways? What about our distance ed capacity? We tend to do that at each of our institutions, but we have variance in how much institutions are doing. It's very variable. The ways they do it are variable as well. Should there be more of a coordinated state strategy around that to make sure we're able to meet the needs? How do we serve those underserved parts? And then what's the right mix of bricks and mortar versus alternative delivery models? If we think about 2 decades from now, are we going to be learning in very different ways than maybe we are today, and how will technology help and support that, and what do we need to do? So those are some of the questions that they're raising. What questions does that bring for you? What? So what did you say?
I said we should be focusing on Washington County a little bit more.
obviously, Washington County, I mean, you look at this and you have to say, Washington County's got to be part of what we think about. No doubt about that. I mean, the population growth is going to happen. Utah County, Washington County, and probably some Salt Lake, but those are going to be important areas. So now the good part is the president and I have had this conversation. The good part is sometimes it's good to be the center of attention and sometimes maybe not so good, right? Is that true?
And thank you so much for your work on this. Having this sort of good data is important for where we're headed. This starts to be the beginning of the vision for the future. This is a vision statement almost, and strategies and plans will flow out of that. Are you comfortable with the work of that put this together? Do you have other things you would have them examine? And then one last thought.
You're cutting in and out, I'm sorry.
I'll get it closer to my mouth.
Thank you.
As a venture capitalist, what I find the thing that's most missing when I invest in a company is we can find the workforce, we can't find managers. Or we have to bring the managers into the state of Utah. But are you comfortable with where this is going? And are there other things you'd like to see?
So for me, this really does need to be a data-driven kind of process. That really focusing on the data that we are, in addition to that, going out. That's why these regional meetings were so important, that we're listening to our communities. We're listening to the business community. We're listening to local government officials. We're listening to the educators in that community about what needs to happen. I think we're starting to pull out of this some of the key topics that I think we need to grapple with. Do I think in the next 2 or 3 months, I think we're going to have an overall kind of strategic plan that will be at a very high level with lots of work left to be done by governing board that wants to pick it up and make it happen. And I would also say to all of you that are trustees at your institutions, what about your institution's role in this future? You think about that and think about, you know, this isn't just somebody else's responsibility. We all need to be focused on how we work and align together to best meet the needs of the state. But we also know a lot of that work happens in the regions that we're in. And there is a role, I think, for everyone in this process. So I happen to have, I'm going to get in trouble with Nolan Karras right now, but I happened to be in another meeting with him the other day, and so I shared some of this and just said, okay, is this the kind of thing I should be sharing? And he said, yes. And he's, you know, and I think from that he said, and this would be good for us as trustees to be able to think about with respect to the specific data around northern Utah and the region that we serve and what we do. And so I see this kind of data-driven kind of approach and kind of thinking about the future, something that needs to happen, high level, kind of kinds of things that the legislature and others are looking at, the kinds of things that a statewide governing board is looking at, kinds of things that you're looking at in the institutions. So we all have a responsibility to work together on this.
One of the things that strikes me is that the two counties where we're going to see the greatest population growth also happen to be the two counties where Utah Valley University and Dixie are probably the most land constrained in terms of their ability to expand a physical campus. So it may really force us to think about campuses very differently over the next 30 years, specifically in those two locations.
Yes, you can't look at that and not think about what are the implications of doing this and how can we do it, and it will force that kind of thinking, I think. And we've been having those conversations, particularly I've had those conversations just sharing this data, particularly with those two institutions saying, you know, you need to be thinking about this as well, because this is gonna be a a process that has lots of people involved, and absolutely.
Excuse me. Answer for the landlocked problem in Dixie, if you want to talk to us.
And so does Utah County, by the way, or Utah Valley.
A number of years ago, it's been mainly some legislative help, about 18 years ago, began a program saying our economy was primarily on the extract industry, had moving down, which had left, and we were trying to figure out what we ought to do next. Out of the governor's office became an initiative that we should start looking at engineering. The legislative body picked it up and began focusing specifically, put significant money, and started engineering programs, and with an effort to double and triple the number of graduates that came out. I think you're seeing the benefit of that.
Today.
And I think that was the birth of Silicon Slopes way back then. My question, if that is an example, I know this is all high level right now, but we had a specific target and purpose, and I'm curious at what you anticipate maybe one or two of those to be at the end of the day, a year or two from now, after you get to the high level.
So, engineering initiative, the Computer Science and Engineering Initiative, I agree with you. It's a great example of something that you did strategically to prepare us for the future. And we all know these are long runways. These runways take 5-10 years to bear the fruit because you get programs set up and you got to get students through them, et cetera. And so you've got to think future focused, and I think that's what people did, and I think you're right. And it's not just the tech industry. It's, I mean, you go talk to the folks in aerospace, and it's all about engineers and computer science. So it's not just the tech industry. And I think if you walked around with almost any industry today, you'd see they have lots of needs in those areas, and we're starting to meet them both. But we just did another engineering initiative last year because we still aren't keeping up with all the demand that's out there, and we need to stay focused on that. So this is not, can I move out of commission and talk for a minute? Harris? Is that okay? You asked me to talk about the commission work. And I probably shouldn't do this, but I'm going to do it anyway. And my colleagues in the back are going to get me, tell me I'm. But I'm starting to worry about something different right now. I think we need to keep doing more in some areas, like computer science and engineering, et cetera. I'm starting to worry about, are we really prepared for an AI world of the future, a machine learning world of the future, a data analytics on steroids world of the future? And so I've been meeting with employers of kind of more deep tech companies over the last month or so. And I've been out kind of on the website looking at programs in other states. And I don't think we're there yet, Dave. I think we have to say, this is taking us where we are now, but if we think about, we are only on the front edge in some ways of the capacity of AI, machine learning, data analytics, et cetera, and where it's going to take us. How are we gonna make sure we have the talent at all levels to make sure we can have the workforce we need? Because right now, some of those employers are bringing them in from outside the state because we don't have it here. So I think there is a need for us to set up 2 decades from now. And maybe it's not just two. I mean, they're here now, but we just got to get moving in that area. She's got... Or you can stand really close to me.
Really intriguing data. I guess my question is, this is quarantined to Utah. And we're aware the trends throughout the rest of the United States is dramatically different. As a matter of fact, most of their growth rates are dropping dramatically, which we know the educational environments there will become much more competitive drawing. So I'd be curious to know, is this quarantine just to Utah, or what impact will all these other states and their educational institutions, which will then be driving and dragging a lot of these students to their institutions, have on the decision-making that we make?
So, good point. I pulled a lot of Utah-centric data for this. There is some more national comparative data out there. I think if you look at things like the new tech economy and some of those, that's starting to kind of show us where we are in comparison to other places. So some states' population is decreasing, others it's stagnating. I believe in Utah, we have an incredible opportunity because of the growth that we have and because of the age of that population to be able to better meet the needs. So I think we're in a great competitive environment there. And oh, by the way, most of that growth is internally generated, which is not necessarily true in other areas. So it positions us well. What I do think we need to do is that work that was done to diversify this economy. What we saw before was, I came to the state in 1982, when in the 80s, our kids literally getting their baccalaureate degrees and leaving the state in the 80s because they didn't have jobs here. I don't ever want to return to that. I think we have to think very strategically. And a decade ago, we were focused on any job. I mean, it was the Great Recession. The entire country was there. We were focused on any job. We're in a really different place now. And actually, planning should take a different tone because of that. If you think about it, we get a chance now to kind of be more targeted and more strategic, because we have lots of jobs, we have low unemployment. If we're going to continue to grow that, we can think more strategically about how we want to grow that. And we should. And then make sure we're lining up and preparing the talent that's going to help these companies grow that we have now, that may attract others that we want, and really continue to thrive as a state. So I think we need to think about it in that way. But let's not forget, that's what that feels like on the Wasatch Front. It doesn't feel quite that same way in rural Utah. We almost have two economies, kind of two states going on. We also have to think really strategically about how we support rural Utah and our rural communities. And I don't think we've done as good a job as we can. I watch in legislature, we all really care about those, and we pass all these little small programs to try to make a difference in rural economic development, for example. But we probably need to think very strategically about it, so it's not lots of little programs, but some big programs that really could make a difference out there. Yes?
I guess I have a question about the commission, at least what you've shown, and just make a comment. So I work in Utah County for a high-tech company, and I was actually thinking this week, every single day I sat in meetings where we were talking about, we don't have enough analytical skill, we can't find developers, you know, how do we bring in more talent? And so that's like a real need that we see on a daily basis. But when I looked at the study, or at least the draft preliminary thing, it didn't say anything on there around, you know, like technology and those type of skill sets in the future. And so I'm just wondering why that was, and if that's something that you're going to modify when you get to the final report, because there is a real need.
Absolutely. And that's where the regional meetings were really important, and getting out to the regional areas, because trend data doesn't show that in the same way. Carrie, am I messing up here?
Yeah, I think those occupations that come up at the top are really high volume occupations, but they are like the servers at restaurants and the retail sales clerks and stuff. So numerically, they kind of overwhelm that technology, But we do know that that tech demand is more important because it's going to take a lot more formal education in order for people to get into those occupations.
And I can't stress how big the shortage is. And we can't hold on to anyone, and we're all paying like astronomical fees for people that don't have a skill set that probably deserve it quite yet, just because we can't find people.
And I'm hearing that over and over again as I get out and around. So. But also, just to balance that out, I'm also hearing we can't get skilled tradespeople. We have to think about this in a very, very balanced way across the state. It's incumbent upon us to say, yes, there is a strong computer science, engineering, tech kinds of job needs out there. On the other hand, there are also lots of kind of middle skill needs for our manufacturing communities, for construction, I mean, just all kinds of areas. Balance that all the time. And I'm going to ask that you as trustees and regents kind of always keep that in mind, that we need to do it all. We don't get a choice of either or. We need both and kind of thinking. Around here, but how we do it in the most efficient and way is also incredibly important. Okay.
I think the commission is doing a great job, and that's a very important topic. And trying to figure out where we go with education is pretty vital. There was a lot of information up there and a lot of data, and I had a lot of questions. I try to boil it down to one or two questions, but the one that comes to mind is when you looked at the study and you looked at the impact of online education, and then you're looking at people staying at home within their communities. And sometimes if you are a student and you can get an education for less expensive online, you might not stay at home. You might move somewhere else. So how did, as you looked at that data and compiled some of the conclusions, how did the online impact of the future education come into play?
So I think what the consultants would say is we're going to need to have a robust strategy for that going forward. And the question for them is, should that be just institutionally based, or should we somehow have a coordinated state strategy, or at least connect what we're doing together so that we, in fact, can make this work better for our students? And let me tell you that I've got Weber State experience, and what I will tell you there is that online was 20% when I moved out of the presidency. It was 20% of the coursework we offered was online, but it wasn't just students taking online courses. It was that student picking up that fourth course online while they were taking also some classroom courses, because that allowed them to kind of meet their requirements in the rest of their life, whether that was work, family, or whatever. So our students don't just kind of see themselves as online students or in-class students. They see, here's what I need, here's the schedule that will accommodate that, and how do we do that flexibly enough to meet their needs is going to be incredibly important. The hybrid model is out there, hybrid's there, but it's also the student who takes a regular class and also takes an online. And they may live a mile from campus, but they've got to go to work, and they've got families, and that makes a difference.
Thank you. I think the study is a couple of years old now, but one of the studies that was done among employees had to do with what they're looking for employees and what their skill sets are. And there's a huge demand for soft skills, communication, written, oral, for problem solving, critical thinking. And I think as we look at our curriculum and what we're offering, we think about the tech skills that Brady's talking about, but I think also we have to start paying attention to what kind of soft skills are coming out. You know, you can get a job with a degree in some particular area of expertise, but to get promoted, to stay, to be a valuable contributor to a company, the soft skills are really lacking right now. And if we don't start paying attention to that, we'll lose these high-tech companies if we're not providing employees that are promotable and add to the value of their company.
Totally agree. That has to be part of it. And when I'm talking about programs, I'm assuming those are part of the competencies and skills we develop. And Spencer's going to be on me in a minute.
So, Senator Milner, one more thing, that as you look at the data, these jobs are not independent of each other. When we prepare a business plan, the way it goes is hire a salesperson. He generates $400,000 in revenue. To support that revenue that is generated, we need to hire a support engineer. We need to hire a shipping person. So this is not independent of each other. If you don't allow us to hire these, or if you, we don't have the talent that is available at a certain level, it impacts all the way around. A highly skilled person helps generate 7 additional jobs. And that is something that has to be considered in this data, because if you say, okay, I need so many of these people, how did those jobs come about?
Yeah,
how do we do that symbiotic relationship into, how do we take it into consideration?
Agreed. And it does have to be both and. I totally understand that. So, and part of that's going to be what we, an ongoing dialogue, and has to be an ongoing dialogue with our business community, because this can't be just a snapshot. We have to keep iterating this and following where we're going, and get more focused on understanding kind of the job needs and how do we bring that back to doing planning within our systems and our institution to make sure we have really targeted what we need to target for the future. Okay, Lewinda, I think you're probably the last question. I think they want me off.
No, I was just going to ask you, as a result of this, I see in my mind these things we can do, but the data that you used said Utah, and we're individual universities, and sometimes we work in silos because we want to have more students come here, and we, be honest, that's sometimes what we do. But this is a problem that we all share. How can we collectively work on the solution without being territorial?
I think we don't have the luxury in the future of just seeing that we're separate, independent institutions all working on our own thing. We are going to have to collaborate more, and we need better and more robust ways of doing that. We can't meet the future demand that we are going to need to meet unless we really do develop strong patterns of shared planning and collaboration. You want me? Yes, please.
That was a great way to end. That was a perfect way to end.
Well, I mean, I just do want to say, this is our collective future. And we all need to work together on this. And this isn't about the commission's work, and it's not just about the legislators' work, and it's not about the region's work, and it's not about the trustees' work, and it's not about the institution's work. It's about all of our work. Really coming together, doing shared planning, collaborating together, but being very, very strategic about this future. Not just waiting to be kind of incrementally responsive to what happens to us, but to really focus in a very strategic way on 2 decades from now. Where do we want to be? And I know that's hard kinds of thinking, but we need to be there. And that's what we're trying to, and then how that interface, and from a statewide perspective, with everything else that we need to do as a state. So thank you all very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Senator Milner. We're really fortunate to have someone with the depth background in higher education serving in a leadership position in our legislature, and we really appreciate all the many hours that you spend working to make this a stronger state, to strengthen higher education and every other way, but thank you for being with us today. We're going to take a 15-minute break. When you come back, please mix up. No more than 2 regents at a table, no more than, trustees, spread yourself out, meet some new friends. But we'll be back here in 15 minutes.